Wednesday, September 4th. London and Berlin had air raid warnings today. British planes scattered a German squadron on its way to London. And in Berlin, Nazis said heavy cannon fire drove off RAF planes. The British were said to have appeared over Berlin's outskirts, but did not drop any bombs. In Romania, the government searched for members of the pro-Nazi Iron Guard. Now Columbia's correspondents report direct from Berlin and London. First, Edwin Hartridge reporting from Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin.
The German press this morning continues to ignore the news from Washington and London that 50 overage American destroyers are to be traded for English naval bases. Some officials that we have contacted so far have told us that they have received no instruction but delicate diplomatic angles. Then some military officers have told us privately their views of the trade and its possible results. They claim that the destroyers are old and shall have to be reconditioned, which will take some time. Secondly, they have yet to arrive in England, where English crews must be trained to handle them. Then there is the finisher, that 50 Stukas could effectively dispose of the 50 American destroyers once the ships get within range of these dive bombers. At the Foreign Office press conference this morning, the spokesman made a brief but ironic comment on the destroyer naval base deal. He pointed out that Secretary of State Cordell Hull had accepted the British offer of naval bases in the New World with a great deal of pleasure. And the spokesman here added ironically, but considering the unselfish relations between the two democracies, that this deal was to be expected. The spokesman also commented, somewhat caustically, on the failure of the Swiss to prevent foreign planes from flying over its territories while in bombing raids. This was a reference to the British raids on northern industrial centers in Italy. Last night, the British were again over Berlin. It was a nice, clear night, and the first anniversary of the entrance of England into the war. So we had expected something might happen. According to the official communique this morning, a British plane flew over singly at great altitude. They dropped some flares, but no bombs. I saw and heard heavy anti-aircraft fire and the play of searchlights, but because of the distance, I could get no idea of what was really going on. Last night, German bombers and fighters continued their raids on England, we are told, but so far we have no details of the night's operations. Robert Wagner, the district leader for Alsace, in an interview in the Frankfurter Zeitung, has stated that the National Socialists will not repeat the unpardonable mistakes that the old German Empire made in Alsace. It is necessary to undertake a, quote, purification, unquote, of this German country, he writes. That was not done in 1871. We will eliminate certain groups which are strangers to the country, he writes, and which endeavor to create certain national conflicts in Alsace, unquote. Herr Wagner, on the National Socialist idea, is to thoroughly, quote, re-Germanize, unquote, these provinces of Alsace and Lorraine. He has decreed that the official language henceforth will be German. For instance, Christian names must only be used in their Germanic form, so that the French Henri becomes the German Heinrich. Business firms must change their French names into German equivalents. And in the future, all inscriptions on tombstones must be in German and not in French. And the National Socialists are enrolling the German boys from the ages of 10 to 17 into the Hitler Youth, while the girls between 10 and 20 are being enrolled in the bond of German maidens. Herr Wagner has pointed out that he expects the population of Alsace to help eliminate all French influence, their language and culture. For a few hours last night, telephonic communications between Berlin and Bucharest were cut off during the street demonstrations in the Romanian capital. But there is little news in the Berlin press this morning of what is taking place in Romania. According to a day-and-day report this morning, Finland is reorganizing its defense forces. A new law has been passed, placing a civic guard, which corresponds to the American National Guard, under the control of the War Ministry, and the Ministry of Defense will, in large part, be henceforth directed by the Army General Staff. This is Edwin Hartridge. I return now to Columbia in New York.
This is New York, and here is a dispatch from Rome. Italy and Germany intend to give serious consideration to the British-American trade of naval bases for destroyers, responsible Italian informant said today. Informants declined to say what action might be taken. Here's a dispatch from Moscow. Russia has just called up for regular service its Army class of 1920. This includes men of the first 8 months of the class of 1921, grammar school graduates of the class of 1921, and some men of older classes who have been released. Reliable sources in Shanghai said that General Nishihara has advised the Indochina colonial government that Japanese troops will enter Indochina on Friday. The general is chief of the Japanese mission to the colony. This reported decision of the Japanese command is understood to be the result of a rejection by the French government at Vichy of a Japanese ultimatum. Now the news reported direct from London by Larry Lesser.
This is London. Great Britain enters the second year of the war with the press hailing what amounts to her first diplomatic victory. The naval treaty with America. The trade of air and naval bases in American waters for 50 destroyers. London's influential press recognizes the deal first as a reinforcement of the Royal Navy. A reinforcement which far more than balances the loss of Navy strength due to the surrender of France. The transfer of the 50 American destroyers adds the equivalent to the Royal Navy of more than 25% of Britain's pre-war destroyer strength, on which the main brunt of the war has fallen so far. Britain is now able to increase protection of her convoys and at the same time tighten up the blockade on a tremendously extended coastline, which the Royal Navy has to watch since the fall of France. It is believed here that the United States, too, should have every reason to feel satisfied over the bargain. The British press says that America received as a gift, unconnected with the destroyer transaction, the lease of bases in Newfoundland and Bermuda. The British public is told that this will relieve America's anxiety regarding her position on the Atlantic front, and thus contribute indirectly to the defense of the West Coast, since America will be able to maintain a larger proportion of the United States Navy in the Pacific. So far as the British are concerned, they believe that the leasing of these naval and air bases to America gives them not the slightest ground for misgiving, so long as there is no question of a transfer of sovereignty. Best of all, says the British press, in furthering the security of the United States and that of Britain at one stroke, the seal of a mutual friendship has been put on a contract between England and the United States, which both countries regard as permanent and indissoluble. We understand that in the very near future, the first eight of the transferred destroyers will sail to a certain unnamed British port. There they will become British destroyers, without names. Mr. A.B. Alexander, First Lord of the Admiralty, had this to say last night about the agreement. I quote, "They come at a time when the strain upon our destroyer fleet has been very great, and they will be of inestimable value to us. Not only for escorting convoys, but also for protecting our coast from a threat of invasion. Apart from the immediate advantage to both our naval defense and that of the USA, this event will strengthen the feeling of goodwill and friendship between our two great peoples." Unquote. The only words aimed to temper British rejoicing this morning was the warning by Mr. Anthony Eden, War Minister. He pointed out that it would be most foolish to suppose that the autumn of that because the autumn approaches, the threat of invasion is past. However, the British newspapers have virtually hidden this statement on their back pages. Incidentally, the actual information regarding the Anglo-American Naval Treaty has been known in London for several days. It seems obvious to many Britishers that the announcement was delayed in order that it might commemorate the first anniversary of the war, possibly for a small effect, both on the British public and on Britain's enemies. The news of German raids on England and London itself are receiving less and less prominence here, although we had 3 air raid warnings yesterday and another for breakfast today. One enemy plane has been brought down after a large force of bombers and their fighter escorts approached the southeast coast from several directions. And during last night, German aircraft were over at least 20 towns, but the damage they caused is reported to be very slight. Londoners are who have been taken to the shelter so often, but have actually seen very little damage caused by the bombers, are annoyed because the sirens disturbed their work. A prominent labor man speaking at the National Trades Union Club declared that the sirens were a curse, and as a result of them, many useful hours have been lost. It's a fact that now a number of factories, public services, and other large buildings have installed watches on their roofs. The workers don't go to the shelters when the sirens sound, but wait until the roof watchers warn them of approaching aircraft. And there's a new issue in London this morning, whether the double-decker buses could keep running when the sirens sound. But after all, these air raids are the most extraordinary experience anyone has ever lived through here. So even the bus drivers can't be blamed. Returning now to CBS in New York.
That was Larry LaSur reporting the latest news from London. Now here in New York is Linton Wells to give you more news and his analysis of late developments. Mr. Wells.
The turbulent Balkans continue to occupy the European spotlight. Shortly before midnight, the Romanian pro-Nazi Iron Guard made an unsuccessful attempt to overthrow King Carol's government and depose the king himself. Revolutionary outbreaks occurred simultaneously in Bucharest, Brasov, and Constanza. They were curbed so quickly as to indicate that the Romanian government was pre-warned. In Bucharest, 15 Iron Guard members wearing military uniforms attempted to seize the radio station and telephone system, but were arrested before they could carry out their plans. Simultaneously, shots were fired at King Carol's palace, and the city was flooded with printed manifestos which demanded that Carol abdicate. An appeal to the Army, Navy, and Air Force to join the uprising. The manifestos were signed by Horia Sima, leader of the Iron Guard, for whom the police are scouring the country. Sima accused Carol of looking around for support outside the Axis powers, meaning, of course, Germany and Italy. He promised continuation of the dynasty with Prince Michael on the throne if Carol would abdicate and leave the country. The Romanian Iron Guard is an anti-Semitic pro-Nazi faction which has proved troublesome to Romania for several years. It has been blamed for a long series of assassinations and governmental crises, and while he felt he could rely upon Britain and France for support, Carol persecuted its members energetically. For some months since entering the Rome-Berlin orbit, the king has permitted the Iron Guard to play an increasingly important role in Romanian affairs. And now that Romania has been stripped of Bessarabia and northern Bukovina by Russia, and is in the process of losing Transylvania to Hungary and Dobruja to Bulgaria, little remains of the country but a memory. Germany has guaranteed Romania's new restricted frontiers and reportedly is preparing to move troops into the country on September 15 to back up these guarantees. In the light of all this, last night's uprising holds the interesting possibility that the Nazis attempted a coup d'etat in order to circumvent further Soviet penetration into the Moldavian province of Romania. This has been threatened and would certainly strain Russo-German relations at a time when Hitler doesn't want them strained. Certainly, any further persecution of the pro-Nazi Iron Guard and continued internal unrest over the Transylvania and Dobruja surrenders will give Hitler an excuse to place Romania under so-called protective custody and thereby checkmate the Kremlin's manifest desires to move further into southeastern Europe. As you noted from our Berlin correspondent Edward Harkers this morning, the Germans are not talking about current Romanian developments, with good reason, because certainly they are not encouraging. From Shanghai comes the interesting announcement that the Japanese will probably begin their long-expected occupation of French Indochina next Friday. General Nishihara, who chiefs the Japanese mission to French Indochina, is said to have told the colonial government of France's Far East possession to submit peacefully or suffer the consequences of resistance. For some time now, the Japanese have been bringing pressure to bear upon the Pétain government to permit the movement of Nipponese troops across Indochina. While the Vichy government reportedly was willing to grant Japan certain military privileges, it balked at what would amount to complete surrender of the colony. Recently, the Japanese are said to have delivered an ultimatum which the Japan government rejected. Now comes the Japanese decision to march, which will upset the status quo in the Far East, which Secretary of State Hull has proclaimed frequently must be maintained. However, Washington is not expected to do more than protest the impending Japanese aggression, even though it will place the Nipponese in a better position from which to attack Britain's great naval base at Singapore when the time is ripe, the Dutch East Indies when the time is ripe for that, and eventually the Philippines a few years from now. The Japanese will gain control of an elaborate new naval and air base at Turan, upon which the French have been working furiously for several years, and that will prove invaluable to them and justify this impending act of aggression.
And with the news thus analyzed from New York by Linton Wells, we conclude this regular morning report of European developments. Edwin Hartridge reported from Berlin. Larry Lesser reported from London. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.